Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, Sal, I made a plea about to Shohei, and he didn't listen to me. But I think I can get to Yoshi's heart. And look, all these teams are interested. You're going to make it in the major leagues. There's no better spot. New York, New York. Yankees already made their splash. It's the Mets' turn. So, Yoshi, why come here? I'll give you four simple reasons. Number one, you're the ace. You're going to be the number one starter on the Mets. You're the man. If the Mets win, you are a hero. You are a legend in your mid-20s. Ask Keith and Ron what it's like when the New York Mets win the World Series, okay? You're the man. Number two, familiarity. Look at Kodai Senga's season last year. He was an all-star. He could show you the ropes around New York. He knows where the real original Ray's pizza is and why that red fry fork is so important to use at Nathan's. Little things like that go a long way. Number three, the money. King Cohen, no one's going to pay you more to pitch. Steve Cohen jumped on a plane to take you to a French-Japanese dinner out there. Who else flew in to see you? You want a plane of your own? We've got that. You know what? We'll start Yamamoto Airlines and fly right to Japan out of either White Plains or Islip. Your choice. Four, did I mention the money? How about a burrow? Pick a burrow. It's yours. Queens? Not Queens. It's Yamamoto's. Yoshi, this is a no Rainer, you'll be a well-paid pitching hero out at Citi Field in Queens. I'm sorry, out in Yamamoto County. The Yankees are all about Juan Soto. The Mets will be all about Yoshi Yamamoto. It's all yours, Yoshi. Come to the Mets. You won't regret it.
We're back and joining us second time in a month. That's because the hot stove, which has been the cold stove, is finally heating up. Michael Marino at Marino MLB on Twitter, national MLB reporter, going out there grinding, reporting the news. And Michael, you know, I got to tell you, before the Ohtani news, worst winter meetings that I've experienced, and I guess they've been marketing these things for about 20 years. One of the slowest off seasons, and we've had off seasons where there was a lot of star players signing after the new year. But I felt this was one of the slowest starts of the offseason. It's being blocked by Ohtani. It's being blocked by Yamamoto. The news came out with Ohtani. Any reaction to that? A ton of money. Any reaction? Are you surprised? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so, I mean, I have been tracking this thing for a while. You know, I actually, if you were following kind of along my reporting, first heard Red Sox were out and the Rangers were out. Then I put up those four teams that I was hearing, which it appears ended up being those four finalists, which were the Blue Jays, the Dodgers, the Cubs, and blanket on one, Angels. And so I had heard, similar to what Rosenthal reported, Rangers just could not pull it off. He cited TV revenue. I don't entirely know how. I think to some extent between us boys, I think it's a cop-out. They didn't want to do it. Yeah, and you're never going to fault a team for not paying someone $700 million.
The Mets weren't going to do it. According to reports, the Cohen wasn't going to do it. You know, not exactly that he would come to New York. I mean, you'd have to beat that offer. It's hard to beat that offer. What are you going to give him, a billion?
Exactly.
A DH? Because that's all he is right now, is a DH. I don't want to diminish who he is, but things have changed a lot since since last offseason, the beginning of the year.
Totally. And so that's where Rangers took themselves out. Red Sox took themselves out. Came down to those four. The next team to bow out was the Cubs, and that left the Angels, the Dodgers, and the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays made a real push. Obviously, there was some inaccurate buzz about, oh, he's flying in Toronto, and, you know, that obviously wasn't accurate. But what I do know is their push was real. They really tried their hardest to get him. They were a real player when it came down to it. The Angels were in it, but, you know, I think what they were trying to do, like they wanted Shohei Ohtani, no doubt, but it's hard to tell your fans, like, we didn't make a real push for to re-sign the best player and, you know, like, possibly ever. So they wanted to be in it till the end, and all their reporting is like, oh, the Angels were one of the finalists. And, like, I think they're comfortable with that. Like, you know, if they heard that, like, they bowed out weeks ago, like, I think it would have been an uproar of, like, they didn't even try to get him back. But, you know, they were in that mix, and then it came down to the Dodgers and the Blue Jays. I don't have a clear idea of what the Blue Jays offer was. I'm sure it was competitive for him to be, you know, strongly thinking about it. But 10 years, $700 million, I mean, that's crazy money. And he's a great player. He's one of the greatest players, maybe when it's said and done, like, of all time. What, you know, here's what I'll say here. Like, the deferrals are a huge part of this contract.
And it's interesting how MLB is going to view that, because that's a circumvention of the luxury tax, the same luxury tax that guys like Steve Cohen paid a ton of money last season to have his team lose 87 games.
100%. And that's where it's tricky in how you judge this. Like, the rates are so high right now that anyone who's willing to take deferred money, like, the team right now has to just be, like, so happy that he was on board with that. Because not only does it help the team be competitive when he's there, It will notch down the actual value of the contract, and there's almost no way the rates are anywhere close to what they are now when, you know, they're paying him till, you know, he's a senior citizen, right? Like, he's going
to
be getting
money. They're probably trying to get this contract down to about $500 million present value, I would think, somewhere along
those
lines.
Exactly.
Like $50 million a year or something like
that. Yeah. I mean, my understanding is, like, when you look at the AAV every year, during those 10 years, it's probably going to come down like $40 to $50 million. It's a great deal for Ohtani, right? I mean, you get $700 million. Everyone knows it's a great deal for him. For the Dodgers to be able to do that much deferred money, it's crazy. You know, I honestly think other teams now knowing how much deferrals, you know, like how much was deferred. I mean, like, I don't fault the Mets for not being in, but, you know, if they're giving him $10-15 million for 20 years, like, that's a drop in the bank. Yep. You know, and so it's a great deal for both sides. And what I kind of looked into was, like, the calculations of how much money he generates from merchandise sales and what the Japanese market brings in. That comes to about $20 million when it's said and done. My guess is, being on the Dodgers and not the Angels, it's probably closer to like 25 because of how big their market is. You know, ticket sales are not really impacted in terms of how much they sell out, but you got to imagine the price of a ticket might have just gone up a little bit to see that guy.
Sure.
So, you know, let's say it's $25, $30 million you're making a year in just having Shohei Ohtani on the team. Well, if he's getting 70, then you're marketing about $40 million a year of on-field play in terms of his value. And I think you can reasonably get there. Like, I don't think that's a reach. So I just think it makes sense. But no doubt, like, I had been hearing 600, and I put it out, like, don't be surprised if this starts with a 6. And people are like, what?
Well, yeah.
And, you know, absolutely. Didn't think it would start with a 7, but, you know, the man deserved to be paid, and he surely was.
And the thing about this is, if you go to, you know, you just go and look it up online. You look at NFL quarterbacks, Hebert, Murray, you know, $45, $46 million a year. Damian Lillard, Antetokounmpo of the Bucks, almost $60 million each per year. Now, I know those are short-term contracts. I know NFL has no guarantees. There's a lot of signing bonus money. I get that. Baseball now is in a spot where if you're good, you're going to get $25 million. If you're really good, you're probably going to get $40 million, $35, $40 million. And maybe if you're a Hall of Famer like Ohtani, maybe it's time to get paid like that. And, you know, I know there's been some criticism of Ohtani from the media basically saying, hey, you ruined the winter meetings. You could have had this LeBron James, you know, tour. And he didn't want anything to do with it. I don't blame him on that. I'm not quite sure. And for someone who's trying to build his, you know, brand on rumors, it's a slippery slope. I think it's been abused over the years. I think the problem is that fans don't trust anything anymore. And to criticize the guy for basically making the media's job harder, I'm not so sure it would have marketed baseball anymore. Yeah, it would have put it front and center in the offseason like the NBA does on the 4th of July. But I'm not so sure that those kind of tours, the LeBron James tours, sit well and put any sport in the right front-facing. I think they're off-putting and they frustrate anger people more. My opinion. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I mean, I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, here's what I'll say. You know, when the agent and the teams are willing to talk, you'll see a lot less misinformation. And a great example of this is how we believed he was on a flight to Toronto for like a full 6 hours before finding out that that wasn't actually the case. If his team and the teams involved were willing to kind of comment on it or put it to rest, you know, like that wouldn't have been the case. When you talk to, you know, people with these organizations, like they were scared to comment.
Except Dave Roberts.
Exactly. And he got scolded for it, right? Like in his presser, he said, like, I don't want to lie. I'm not going to, like, lie to you guys. I want to tell you the truth. And, you know, like, right after, it was like the organization was mad at him. Like, he was under a lot of scrutiny from the team. And he got a ton of backlash for just like commenting on what he knew. And, you know, I think it's somewhere in between. Like, he is entitled to his privacy. But to say, like, I think a part of it, like, I had an understanding that when I reported that the Rangers and the Red Sox were out, like, there were some people who were not happy with my reporting. Because they didn't feel comfortable commenting it on it in the first place, whether it was right or wrong. And so now you're putting the teams in a tough spot where there's a report out there, true or false. You saw Jed Hoyer rip Bob Nightingale. And,
About Christopher Morel. Yeah, Nightingale basically has gone out and done his own rant about the rumor bill. Look, everybody's trying to make a living. There's a lot of pressure for clicks. This is the time of the year where you can get it. And, you know, I agree. And I don't know where I read it. 95% of this, and I think that we talked about this the last time you were on. This is no big secret in the industry. 95% of this stuff, I believe, comes from agents. And it's their best interest to leak. And having a relationship with an agent can get you a lot. But it's like the telephone game. I could talk to Michael Marino now at, quarter after six on a Sunday, tweet something out, you might have heard it 3:30 or 3 o'clock. That's 3.5 hour gap. And the old two sources, that doesn't necessarily lend itself to winning the digital game. So we're in this muck. And look, Michael, we're going to be heading into another one of these because now the, you know, Mets fans are upset, Soto to the Yankees. I've never seen, it's funny because Yankees fans are so really focused on the Mets in a way that really makes you, it shows you how they're a little nervous about Cohen. Cause you don't worry about a team if you don't going sure. after certain players, if you didn't care. Mets fans are bracing themselves for the worst and losing out to the Yankees. They've never beaten the Yankees one-on-one for a big free agent going all the way back to Reggie Jackson. They've never been seriously in the consideration. And now Yamamoto, who some thought was going to be in New York and Cashman was going to do a Pat Riley and throw the rings down on the table and have Tanaka and Matsui and all the, you know, pomp and circumstance, all the history, they're meeting him out in L.A. because it saves the guy 6 hours worth of flights. And Hal will be there. No Tanaka, no Matsui. I know everybody says it's a fait accompli of the Yankees. You hear people say, well, he's always dreamed about being a Yankee. Then I hear people say he's always dreamed about being a Dodger. I'm like, I don't remember hearing him say anything. Like, I don't know. Maybe you have something. So all I know is the Mets really want him. In the past, going all the way back to when he was bidding on a Greenwich, Connecticut mansion, Steve Cohen wants something, he usually goes a dollar more and tries to get people in the room and hash it out. Where does this stand? Because since the Soto trade, the fait accompli has been the Yankees. Yankees fans are feeling confident, and they've been citing the pinstripes, the history, the Japanese player relics coming over. And now, going out to L.A., a little less personal than Steve Cohen and David Stearns flying to Japan, almost like a high school, a college coach recruiting. It was interesting to see that.
Totally. I mean, here's what I'll tell you, and I'm going to kind of let you in on everything I've heard. You know, that price tag, it's gone up week after week after week. I originally got over 200. I reported it like 4 or 5 months ago. People were freaking out. Then I said it might be closer to 3 than it is 2. People were freaking out. You know, I'm talking to people now, and like, I asked someone last week, what's the over under? Like, and this is someone seriously in the know. He's like, I would peg it at like 250. 250, 260. I'm like,
I would take the over. I think this is a $30 million a year player. I don't know if he gets 10 years. Maybe it goes down to they match the Cole contract and the Mets do something like that. Or the Mets say, look, for us to beat the Yankees or the Red Sox or Chicago, I don't know how serious Chicago, you know, St. Louis apparently is in there. And anchor this rotation with Senga, have this Far East, you just talked about revenue. I just have to blow it away and go to the 35, 36, 37, maybe 40.
No, but
that's a risk. That's a risk.
It's totally a risk. And, you know, I asked that same guy today. I said, you still at 250? He said, I think it's at 300 now. And so, you know, this price tag just, it keeps on going up. You know, I have kind of monitored the Dodgers throughout, and I have, you know, some good info there about, you know, I was tracking them with Ohtani, and I asked today, like, what's the deal with the Dodgers and Yamamoto? And I heard they love him. They really, really like him. They don't like him at $300 million. And that matters because, you know, you just spent $700 million on Shohei. Now, you know, the first few years, we have yet to see how those deferrals play out. You know, let's say it's $40 million. Their rotation is, I will be the one to say it, not good. If you look at the Dodgers rotation, it needs a lot of work.
The Yankees rotation could use some work, too. I wasn't ready to crown them champions after getting Soto, which is going to be an interesting outfield with Judge and center with the wear and tear and all that stuff. But
they need help. Right. I mean, all three, the Mets, the Yankees and the Dodgers, they all need help. Now, here's what I'll tell you about what he wants, because this is something that everyone says they know what Yamamoto wants, and it's XYZ. You know, there was a West Coast rumor weeks ago. I asked, you know, someone who would know. They said it's not true. In fact, he might even prefer the East Coast to the West Coast. So that's one thing. I asked about the teams. I said, does the history of the team matter? If the team has a rich success, does that impact it? That was a yes. And so one of the things that the impression he's gotten from Major League Baseball, is there's something to be said for historic organizations with rich histories. And in his mind, playing for an organization with a rich history, that's not a winner. That's not a game changer. It's a deal breaker. And so if you have two of the same offers, that's going to be the tiebreaker. So if it's Mets and Yankees and you're at the same money, he probably will choose the Yankees because of their rich history and all the rings. And that is totally a role here. But money talks. And if, you know, like we can both say, if Cohen blows away the Yankees offer, he beats it by 20 million, chances are he goes to the Mets. You know, I asked a few kind of media guys, bigger names and guys who have good reads and good instinct here. And they said he feels like a Met, and not necessarily because of information they have that would suggest it. It's just the way you see this offseason, the Yankees got their guy. The Dodgers got their guy. You have other players in, and I think we need to talk about them. The Cubs are a player. The Blue Jays are a player. The Red Sox, to an extent, are a player. And you have a few others in there in the mix, too. So, you know, he's holding up the rest of the pitching market. Like, that's another thing that we need to talk about. But it's really unclear. You know, I think the Mets, they're as in it as they can be at this point. But to say conclusively he's going one way or the other is a guess. And
the thing is, what's left to pitch? What he, you know, he comes to the U.S., the Mets went to Japan. I don't know what's left to pitch other than details of a contract. I don't know if they exchanged figures in the initial meeting. I think the Mets are going to have to go big and take the risk and maybe go 35 to 40 million AAV to lock them up. I'm not sure the Yankees go that deep already having Cole on the roster. They have now they just traded away some young pitching, but they've had a good history of developing at least something. You know, Montgomery's there is one example. I think the Mets really need, if they're going to win in the near term, I think they need this guy. And I think the plan B's, and I think that's where you're going. I like Montgomery, but his market's getting expensive. You're going to start paying him A money for B performance. Blake Snell, to me, is Carlos Rodon. He's going to be a bust of a contract. Maybe I'm being hard on him. This is a guy that was the weakest of the Padres starters when they faced the Mets in the postseason a year ago. I know he has a good run in him. He did it with Tampa. He did it last season. But he wasn't great the whole season. You saw both sides of Blake Snell. And he's going to get paid big money, maybe not to the level of Yamamoto. But let's face it, if you're Boris and you see Yamamoto get $30 million, I got a Cy Young Award winner here. Why shouldn't he? You know, you're looking at 7 years, $250 for probably Snell. I wouldn't do it. And then you look at the Mets and you're like, okay, do you just go with a lot of Lucas Giolito types, regroup for next year and see what next year's market is, see how your players develop? That's a tough sell. You know, puts a lot of pressure on Stearns. Now, I don't think Stearns will have a problem with that because he's already shown, I'm not going to let the media pressure me. I'll go out and I'll sign minor league deals with Jose Iglesias. I don't care. I'm not going to wait till February because everyone's like, why is he doing all this? Well, he's doing it because that's all that's out there right now. Usually you do these in February. The market right now is dictating you got to do these moves first and then build your core roster. So the plan Bs are there. I like Montgomery. But I like Montgomery more at like 5-125, and I think that that's not where he's going right now. Not with, you know, not with the numbers you're seeing thrown out there.
I mean, his market's rich, and I'll tell you that. Like, the three main suitors there, and one of them, Ken Rosenthal is reporting, might not be a player, is the Rangers. A return to the Rangers kind of was seen as the favorite for a while. Ken Rosenthal reporting yesterday that that might not be the case, that their TV revenue is really impacting it. And again, like, you know, I have my doubts. Like, I think aspects of this are, it's definitely a nice cop out to not be in on a high profile free agent if you're having TV revenue issues. They have the money. And like, maybe I'm wrong here. But, you know, I was just talking to some people and they're like, I have my doubts about how legitimate these money issues are. Like, I'm sure they have some uncertainty, but it shouldn't take them out of Jordan Montgomery or Josh Hader. Like, they can pull these off if they need to. Ohtani, another question. You know, that's a whole separate issue. But, like, they could pull off Montgomery if they needed to. They could do the same with Hader. The Red Sox are 100% a team to watch for Jordan Montgomery. And the Mets, I think this, in their eyes, if the money is right, I think this is their favorite option behind Yamamoto. And
but not with them. Like, originally, I'd like to team them up. That doesn't sound like that's possible.
I think that's probably what you're saying is probably likely the case. Here's what I'll tell you. Like, I think they do like Snell to an extent. I think the qualifying offer makes it tricky. Like, it's reasonable to have your doubts about Blake Snell. Like, he almost profiles as the every other year type of guy, like has a 4-5 ERA and then he's the Cy Young. And you're like, we can never get the same Blake Snell for like consecutive years. And it's a totally reasonable concern. The upside, obviously, there. He doesn't go deep in the games often. You know, it feels like half the games he pitches are like five innings, no runs, right. And he threw 100 pitches, and you're like, all right, well, that was a good game, but he went five innings.
You have a game to win in the postseason. Okay, five innings, no runs is helpful in a game seven.
Yeah.
But now you're leaving a guy that's getting that kind of contract can't leave me 16 outs out of the bullpen or 15 outs out of the bullpen.
Totally. And you know? You know, like, that's what I call a nibbler. Like,
or 12 outs really out of the bullpen, I should.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Say 16, 12 outs out of the bullpen.
Totally. Like, he is, in my definition, the nibbler. Like, he nibbles around the zone. He doesn't, like, and I have gone to, like, three Blake Snell games in person. And so I've watched him pitch a fair share of times. Like, he walks too many guys and he throws too many pitches. And, you know, like, he doesn't want to give up hard contact, and I get it. And so that's why he has some of those walks. And he'll leave the game, and sometimes his stat line is like, finally, he doesn't give up an earned run. You're like, all right, nice. But like we're talking about, like, he leaves after 5.1 and he's pulled with 100, you know, three pitches, and you're like, come on. Like, yeah. I like
give
that.
Give me another 20 pitches. Give me another inning. Get me to the seventh inning. You know, say what you want about the decline of Verlander and Scherzer. That was the attraction of them. They were elite. They got you into the seventh inning. To a certain degree, DeGrom didn't really start. You know, at the end of his tenure there, he wasn't getting you into the seventh inning. Maybe it was because of all the strikeouts. But, you know, Michael, I also look at what's left. And what's interesting is that nobody, I mean, everyone's criticizing the Mets. You know, Stearns is sleepy. They're angry. I mean, I got, after the Soto trade, I was surprised. My inbox, angry Mets fans. I read a couple of them on the air last week on a show I did. Nobody's really done anything outside of the Yankees with Soto and now the Dodgers with Ohtani. But as you look down the market, you know, who else is there? Let's take Yamamoto or Snell out of the equation, Montgomery. We know the Mets want to land the big fish, Yamamoto. Once they do that or don't do that, give me the two paths. What do you see likely? What are the names? What are the paths? You know, Montgomery might be a plan B, but he might be too rich. I think there's a point where Stearns is going to tell Cohen, it's just not worth it. Don't
yeah,
do
and,
it.
And I would look at Imanaga, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Imanaga, yep. No one's talking about him.
He is an option for them. They do have interest in him. I saw Giolito was on a Morosi tweet. I was told pretty directly, like, we're not players there. So
too expensive
I would,
for what you get.
Yep. I don't think they buy it. Like, I don't think they buy Lucas Giolito as a player and the consistency there. There was a tweet, another, I think it was Morosi tweet, that said Eduardo Rodriguez is about to sign, and there was four or five teams.
That was a good contract. That was a good contract by Arizona, but a guy that I don't know, not a guy that I want to give a long term contract to.
I'll tell you this. I talked to a reasonable amount of teams on Eduardo Rodriguez. They were nervous, and it's not even the on field. There's a lot of off field questions there. He declined the trade to the Dodgers last year, and there's some stuff there that, you know, I can't really divulge, but like that was one part. The year before, he went MIA for months on the Tigers. They couldn't find him. They didn't know where he was. And there's a lot of questions here about how much does the player want it? Does he care? Like, he just left in the middle of the season, and the team couldn't even contact him. There was reports they had no idea where he was. Then the next year, he has a chance to go win a World Series. He's on the Tigers, and he just outright declines it. And so a lot of teams that took themselves out here, not because of the player, but because of the off-the-field questions about, is he a fit for what we're trying to build? I know the Mets, were, at the very end, like, they were out. They were in no way interested.
Rightfully so.
And the questions there are, like, did they have the same questions that all the other teams I talked to have? My guess is, yeah. And that's why they weren't players there. But Imanaga, of all the remaining pitchers, is a guy I would watch.
You know, even really with Yamamoto, even with Yamamoto, you think that would knock them out of that?
It's hard to say. I mean, I'd be guessing. You know, I think if they get Yamamoto, they would probably sign like one other Severino type contract.
Maybe like a Jack Flaherty or something like that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you here, Imanaga, we're talking nine digits there. I've heard over $100 million is what he's expected to get. And so, you know, that's not a cheap. This is not Senga from last year where you got a bargain.
Yeah, and Senga would go probably far more this year with the way it is. And you got to give MPB credit. I mean, think about it's quite possible within the next 2 weeks by Christmas, the biggest contract, offensive contract, and the biggest pitching contract will be signed by Japanese stars. A game that was taught by Americans during the war to the Japanese, and they've always been in tournament play, whether it be the Olympics or the WBC, every bit the equal, if not better than the Americans. And Kodai Senga was actually on a Japanese interview. I don't know if you saw that, talking about the differences in the game. And I think listening to the differences in the game could really show you where the league needs to go. And some of the things David Stern's trying to do with more contact, even Billy Epler was trying to do that to a certain degree. But it's quite an accomplishment for the MPB. Now, I know that the Japanese culture is they don't want them coming over here. They want to keep them for themselves and supporting their region and their country. But I have to tell you, having a, you know, Yamamoto with the Mets or the Yankees and Ohtani in LA, that's a lot of exposure for these Japanese stars.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'll point this out. A report yesterday that Roki Sasaki had essentially asked the club that he requested he be posted this year. I was told straight. Not true. Inaccurate. That he did not ask the club if he could come to the United States. So that is not accurate. But like I said, Imanaga, name to watch at $100 million. That's not much of a discount. Like you said, I think, you know, if we're talking Senga in this economy, that's probably 150, right? And they got
and he's got an opt out in a couple of years. He's got an opt out, so he's going to get paid too if he continues along the path and gets healthy.
Stays healthy, and that's going to be a huge part of it too. I mean, his elbow was barking that last year in Japan, and they have a clause in the contract that I believe it manipulates the contract in some way if he gets Tommy John surgery. So, you know, they are wary to some extent, and that's why you've seen them employ that six-man rotation. That Senga's health, you know, that could. They're not taking it for granted. They recognize that they got to be cautious with this.
And they got to do it with Yamamoto too. They're going to have two guys. I mean, Yamamoto is no guarantee. As much as we love the numbers and the hype and the videos, there's no guarantee he stays healthy. There's no guarantee he won't have his own struggles. Look, at one point, Hideki Arabu was supposed to be Roger Clemens and Nolan Ryan. Not too long ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. Different media time, different scouting time. All different things. Hideo Nomo stormed onto the scene, and then you saw what happened there. You know, he was a solid pitcher, but not the Nomo that you saw in 95 and 96. Let's remember that. So there's a lot of risk there with that. And then you look at really what it appears the focus for Stearns has been, more focused on the young players and giving them a shot on the offensive side than I expected. Totally value-driven in the bullpen. I don't think he's going to sign. You think he's going to sign an established reliever, a Robertson type? I don't think so. It sounds like he's going to go with lottery tickets. And I have no idea where he's going to go on the offensive side. I really don't, especially because it sounds like he wants to give Beatty and Mauricio, you know, an opportunity. Alvarez is talking extension, so and we know Alvarez has established himself to at least be a starter. Where do you see them go bullpen and offensive side? Because I'm lost. It sounds like they're going to go value-driven outside of maybe this splash for Yamamoto.
I mean, I want you to take a look at how he worked in Milwaukee. And part of the reason he's no longer in Milwaukee, reportedly, was his trade of Josh Hader. They have an all-star closer. He, you know, from Milwaukee in terms of, like, was in their system, came up through the system, comes up, he's unhittable. You know, you can count them in most big situations, and they have this lockdown closer, and they trade them with a year out. Now, obviously, in Milwaukee, they couldn't really pull off the numbers, but my understanding was ownership was not begging him to get rid of Josh Hader. They were comfortable letting that ride a little bit longer, and when he traded Josh Hader, And in their eyes, it didn't really work out as well as they had hoped because they got back Trevor Rogers, who was very meh. Now, in fairness to Stearns, he was very meh in San Diego the rest of the way that season. So here's what I'll tell you. Like, I think a huge part of it is value driven. If you listen to the way he talks about bullpens, the people you count on game one versus game 162, it's nearly an entire different bullpen when you look at those analytically driven clubs. They
Sure.
take 100 shots in the dark and they hope that 10 of them work out. And that's what he's doing right now. I guarantee you he signed someone that I don't know if it's a David Robertson type, but I don't think he's completely opposed to signing someone who he can count on and knows like has some type of reputation. But I don't think it's in his DNA to pay a Josh Hader, to pay, like, if it was up to him, I bet he would have handled Edwin Diaz a little bit differently, looking back a year ago. But that's what I'll say there. Like, I think there might be a few more value-driven acquisitions, maybe some names mixed in there, one or two guys that that may have some upside or maybe a higher floor that he thinks he can count on. If we're talking about bats, here's what I'll tell you. They want an outfielder. They know they need an outfielder. I know that a lot of the options they've explored are defense first. Margot was a guy they talked to. When we're looking at the non-tender deadline, it was down to the Mets and the Yankees were the teams that were having serious talks for Manuel Margot. I think the Yankees are good on outfielders. They've got like three of them in the last week. So my guess is they're out. They could, again, become a player for someone like Manuel Margot. I want to look at guys like Kevin Kiermaier, Michael A. Taylor. Those are two names I would watch. Harrison Bader. Those are that type of player looks like one that they would like. I think they want a defensive outfielder. Younghoo Lee. I've heard too much buzz with other teams to think that the Mets are like huge players there. I wouldn't be shocked if they emerged as one. The Padres seem to be really interested. The Giants seem to be interested. So that might be where that's headed. Michael A. Taylor has like a surprisingly big market. I think I would
He
watch
hits
that
lefties
one.
well. If you get him to platoon, and the Mets need some right-handed production. They were really bad against lefties last year. Something that wasn't really reported. I looked at it recently. Like, wow, they were really bad against left-handed pitching, and some of that is Nimmo's lefty and what have you,
Sure.
Beatty, things like that. And Pete was bad against lefties. But I could see, are they looking at a Taylor or a Harrison Bader, names that I like as a fourth outfielder, or are they looking at them being their everyday center fielder, moving Nimmo to the corner, and then maybe using one of these scrap heap guys? This is not a sexy offseason outside of Yamamoto. Now, Yamamoto will mitigate the anger, but I'm telling you, this is, and I don't think Stearns cares. And I knew it'd be tough for Stearns. I knew he was coming in. The Yankees were, the bear that was poked. They wanted to recalibrate with that 50 mil owed to Verlander and Scherzer. They got to see what they got with these kids. You can't just start trading guys. You don't have any idea what you have. I hear all
Right.
sorts of various projections on the pitchers. Someone told me they think that they're back in the rotation, guys. Some people feel that Tidwell could be a top of the rotation guy. Give me a bunch of number threes and fours, and we'll figure out the ace later on, right? It's to me, this is going to be a tough. If they don't get Yamamoto, I'm not debating the right strategy. I think Stearns made it clear what he's looking to do with run prevention, but it's going to be tough from a talk radio media standpoint on day one. It's
Absolutely.
going to be really, really tough. Really tough. Really
It's going
tough
to be a tough
introduction.
sell. No doubt about it. I don't think he's worried about his job safety. Like, this guy signed a huge deal. He knows it's a multi-year process. I think a lot of this first year is going to be an evaluation year. He brought in a lot of his people. You see guys like Andy Green who are new to the organization, who are working on the development side. These guys are coming in 2 weeks ago. You think they know what Blake Tidwell is capable of? I mean, they need time to figure this stuff out. And sure, they have their internal projections, but I don't think he's oblivious to the part of this that like he doesn't know entirely what these guys are capable of. I don't think he feels comfortable bailing on a Brett Beatty or a Mark Vientos. I think he knows some of their limitations. Like, I think he knows Vientos is limited defensively, but he's not willing to give up on the bat on either of those guys.
Maybe you see a platoon at DH. You have a DJ Stewart Vientos platoon, perhaps, at the DH spot or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're looking into DH options. Like, I don't think they want to overpay for a DH option. I think that's clear here. Like, I know JD Martinez is someone they've at least talked about. I'm not willing to say they're serious players there, but that's someone to watch. I would watch someone like Justin Turner as a DH option. You know, I have my doubts about how they view guys like DJ Stewart. Like, I want to hear the same. Like, I'm curious if you ask David Stearns kind of behind closed doors, what do you think about guys like Francisco Alvarez? Like, I want to hear from him that he's 100% sold that Francisco Alvarez is the catcher of the future. You know, we're talking about Alvarez, you know, being interested in a new contract. I think he had a great rookie year, but like, are we 100% sold that this guy is the catcher?
I'd like to see him more this year. Show me that he's made progress with the bat. I think he exceeded my expectations on defense.
Absolutely.
Made me look bad. I thought he would be a DH. No, totally. You know, and all I kept hearing was Scherzer. When Scherzer started talking highly of him, I'm like, well, that's a picky guy. That's a connoisseur.
Totally.
That's a maestro talking very highly of him. I need to see more of him. I don't think Beatty's a big leaguer. I'm concerned about Beatty. I like Vientos working with Lindor. Shows me a lot. You know, going, you know, Mauricio to me is the wild card. Is he Christopher Morel? Possibly. Not a bad player, but that's a component player. That's a guy that's going to drive you. You're going to be up. You're going to be down. He's going to drive you crazy. That's where I feel he's going. Where does his position? Third base defense makes me nervous. Obviously, you have Iglesias and Wendell. Maybe Iglesias is brought on to be around the horn defensive player, Wendell, whatever it may be. You know, I said on the newsletter, I said, you know, Wendell's really show that Wendell's signing, I said, gives me an idea that they're really committed to the young guys. And I said that before they really came out and said, hey, we're committed to the young guys. So all this other stuff is noise at this point. A DH, and here's where I think, and tell me if I'm reading the market right, with the bottleneck in the market, and now you've, let's say you get Yamamoto, now you have Bellinger and Snell. There's going to be a ton of guys after January 1st still out there. And Stearns talked about being opportunistic. Guys start looking at the calendar. They don't have a job. It's January 5th. They're going to get a job. But ball players are paranoid. You know this. They're paranoid. They see pitchers and catchers 6 weeks away, 5 weeks away, 4 weeks away. I be calling, I go, yo, where's my offers? What's up? Because it's musical chairs. And that's where I see Cone and David Stearns coming in and maybe doing a rich one-year deal with an option to guys who are not happy with the market and say, you know what? These guys all, you know, set the market. Let me get what I can get now, reset, go back out next offseason. I can see the Mets dominating that kind of market. And that's a possibility. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of kind of the timeline of how I think this offseason will go, I think a lot of the free agent pitchers are waiting for Yamamoto to sign. If I had to put a date on it, my guess, an educated guess, is like December 21st. I think that's December 21st, December 22nd. That's kind of my guess at the timeline there. I know it's going to be before Christmas.
Mets fans are going to drive me nuts for 10 days, man. I got to tell you. And if they don't sign Yamamoto, what a miserable Christmas holiday. They're going to be a miserable bunch. Good Lord. That's going to drive me crazy. I got to tell you.
I don't blame you. That's totally a part of it. I think if you're looking at pitchers who might go, like, maybe one of the rentals go in terms of, like, the trade pieces. Wouldn't be shocked if Tyler Glass now goes, Mets not in there. They're not really in the market to trade for a rental. They don't want to give up prospects.
Stearns doesn't want to trade. Stearns is not trading any of his prospects. That, to me, he basically said that during the hot stove interviews. He's given he's given you the answers. He's not direct. You got to read through it. He had a really good interview with Gelbs and Duquette and Martino on the hot stove. He's told you exactly what the plan is. You just got to make sure you listen to it. That's the thing.
They totally are completely opposed to giving away prospects for a year of a rental. Now, I think if we're talking about someone like maybe Randy or Rosarena, that's a completely different story because now you're talking about a guy with control. Once you start talking about getting control, and that's what he said, right? Stern said, like, if we're giving up control, we want to get control back.
Some kind of control back, right.
Right. And so they're not opposed to trading prospects if they're getting another guy for 3-4 years. But I don't think they're really looking for that right now. Like, I don't think that's the market. I think clearly they're looking at Yamamoto. They're going to figure this one out first. Maybe they go aggressive in other paths if they miss on Yamamoto. Maybe they feel, hey, we, you know, now we've got $250 million. We just $300 million we just saved by missing out on Yamamoto. Let's go get Randy Arozarena. Let's pull off. We need our marquee move of the offseason. Let's get Randy Arozarena. Maybe Paredes from Tampa is shipped. Maybe let's look at him. You know, I don't think they're just going to not spend it at all. Like, they're going to – they have a plan with Yamamoto, and they have a plan without Yamamoto. And value is a huge component of it. I don't think that, you know, they're going to be reckless once they miss on one. They're going to just take all that money and drop it in another. But I do think – you know, they would be more aggressive in other areas if they were to miss out on Yamamoto to compensate for it.
All right, wrapping up here. Give me your prediction, Yamamoto prediction. And will it be a happy Christmas, a Merry Christmas, a happy Hanukkah, a happy New Year for Mets fans? This is going to be an interesting couple of weeks. You know, it's funny because every Yankee fans think tomorrow they're going to like, I think they expect Hal to put the guy in a room, lock the door, and not let him out. That's not how it's working. You know, the most he could do is a Pat Riley and take the rings and throw them down on the table. And those rings are kind of getting old. Riley's was a little bit more recent than and some of them anyway. So what do you think is going to happen?
Man, I want to first stress it's a guess. It's not, you know, sourced anything.
Always
you know,
key.
Yeah, no, and I because you know
we're having fun here. We're not
going
to nail Michael to the cross for anything. He's just trying to give us some good information to get some kind of dialogue and discussion going.
For sure, if I had to guess, you know, maybe I give the Mets a slight edge just because I think they want this one. And I want to be clear: a lot of teams want this one, including the Yankees. Like, I think they're as serious as a player as anyone involved here. You know, you talk to Yankees people, their impression is like, they really, really want this guy just as bad as they wanted Soto. And I think the same can be said for the Mets. Like, they really, really want this guy, but I think the Mets here have more to lose than the Yankees do. And I think Absolutely. For those reasons, that might make the Mets the slight favorite here. But again, this thing is open. There's been no decision made here. So it's gotta be something we'll track. But I'm hoping for those Mets fans, it's a happy Christmas ahead.
Well, Michael, you've done great work at Marino MLB. Great work on Twitter. I know you're working on getting your own media empire here. Hopefully we can keep in touch. I'm sure you and I will talk again when the off season goes. Thank you again. Appreciate it. And let's talk soon, my friend. All righty.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me on, man.
And that's Michael Marino at Marino MLB. Interesting stuff. Buckle up. Because starting tomorrow, you know, all the rumors and all the, you know, this is what Hal had for lunch. And this is what the Yankees presented. And the Mets are in and the Mets are out. And like I said, like, just sit back, let it develop. At the end of the day, this is Yamamoto's decision. The beauty of the whole thing, it's not like the Mets have to convince him to take less money and get creative with the contract to come here. They could give him every bit the contract that anybody else wants, if they want to. Do they want to, depending on where it goes? What's the max value? Is this the guy you want to go $35 million a year on? You know, I know he's 25. He's still an unknown quantity. That you might have to beat Gerrit Cole's contract to get him to come to New York to overcome the tax of not having the rich history and tradition of the New York Yankees. We talked about this weeks ago, like I said in the open. This is Mets versus Yankees, and this is hard. The Mets have never done this before, and there's a lot of reasons to favor the Yankees. There's a lot of reasons. Put yourself, even if you're a Mets fan, if you were a free agent and you wanted to make a buck and you wanted to make a name for yourself, the Yankees provide you a lot. You got to admit that. But the Mets have some cachet too, They play in a beautiful ballpark with an owner motivated to modernize that ballpark and take this team into the next iteration of its history. And in the most diverse community in the city, including a huge Asian community. I know Asian community doesn't mean Japanese, but a huge Asian community. And he's got his, you know, Senga, who he knows. The Mets showed that they could really matriculate Senga into the United States culture on both the culture side, on the baseball side. So let's see. And I'm sure that was part of the pitch that Stearns and Cohen had when they went to Japan. So anyway, want to thank everybody for tuning in to this edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media, and you can show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Don't forget the newsletter. Sign up, substack.com/@talkingmets. No G. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for hosting the show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.